The next guy on the list here, you will see on our rundown here tonight at the FDHLounge.com, who we labeled our favorite film critic. And not just sucking up. We love the guy. He's what's not to like? The guy doesn't take himself too seriously. Gives great reviews on different platforms and stuff. Big sports fan. He's delusional enough to think that LeBron's coming to New York, but we don't hold that against him. So we love the guy. We can only be speaking, of course, of Ben Lyons. Ben, welcome back to the FDH Lounge.
Well, I guess you guys are calling me your favorite film critic because you couldn't get my dad on the phone tonight. He's busy in a screening, I know, in New York.
Well,
so I'm happy to take that crown from him. I appreciate it.
We thought we were going to have you guys together until that came up. Yeah, that would be something if we could do that sometime. I'm sure we can. Multi-generational.
Guys got to work. The big guys got to work, you know. So
yeah.
We'll get them next time. But I'm happy to be on and happy to be talking sports and movies. And you guys are the greatest, so we appreciate it.
I know what that's like because I've got a friend who covers a lot of stuff who I went to college with, who's been a film critic, Kim Potts, and we've come very close to getting her on the show a few times, and she's had some last-minute things come up. So whenever I get any of you film guys, on here, I know that things have worked out in terms of scheduling and whatnot, but I got to say also, before we get started and talking about the Oscars here, I almost feel like we should apologize, because I remember I was reading back, I think it was one of your tweets around the maybe the beginning of the new year here, and you were talking about everybody that fuels your fire, and you were talking about the haters, and thank you for helping to motivate me to be what I am. And I feel like maybe we're not doing our job in terms of motivating you here by saying that you're our favorite film critic and by puffing you up like that.
Well,
we should be haters
like
everybody else and give you that fuel for fire.
Who seems to think that way about me, I hope they tune in to E! On Sunday, because I'll be live at the Oscars all day long, so they're more than welcome to come watch me on Oscar Sunday. I'll be there.
Exactly. They won't be able to escape you. F the haters. That's what we always believe. So, it's.
Hey, listen, when it comes to that stuff, I'm somebody who criticizes people's work for a living. That's what a film critic does. However, there's a way to go about doing it that's professional and is about the work. And I sometimes feel like whether it's film critics talking about actors or film enthusiasts talking about film critics, I feel like sometimes they can get into a personal space, and that's when it becomes unprofessional. And I gotta be honest, man, I'm too busy. I don't have time for that stuff. So I'm happy I'm on with you guys, and I really do appreciate all the support over the years.
No problem. And last note here too, not to wallow in the personal here, but I think a lot of times people get stuff backwards too, because another friend of the show here, Tom Wilson, Ziggy cartoonist, the second Tom Wilson to be doing that. That's another thing here where, I mean, he learned at the feet of the original Tom Wilson and everything like that. And I love how, a lot of haters out there think that, when you've been immersed in something your whole life and grown up loving it, that's somehow a negative, that you've been exposed to something your whole life. You've probably been marinating in this since you were in the crib. I love how people want to take that and make a negative out of it.
It's given me more experience and it makes me more comfortable around some of the more influential actors and filmmakers that I crossed paths with. And I remember going to screenings with my dad at a very young age and seeing, I remember when I would be home sick from school as a kid and I'd want to rent, the latest comedy or whatever on DVD or on VHS back then, he would make sure I came home and watched a great Western like High Noon or Shane or a classic Hitchcock film like Vertigo. So I don't know too many other 11-year-olds watching Hitchcock films at that stage in their life. So I definitely got a head start because of my dad, and I kind of look at it as it helped me with a huge stepping stone to get people to look at me. But then I got to live up to not only my dad's incredible reputation in the business, but my grandfather. My grandfather wrote for the Post for 40 years, 6 days a week. The Lion's Den has been covering celebrities and pop culture figures in American media for 76 years. So I want to live up to be as good as those guys. It's not just show up and you get the job because you got a famous last name. You got to do the work, and you got to do it twice as good because people are expecting that's the only reason you do have the job. So it's been great. And I'm glad you guys understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, it's just an ongoing point of amusement to us. We've talked on the show to Chip Carey and Kenny Albert and some other guys where people just just don't get it. It always just amuses us that people just look on the surface and don't really understand it. But as far as, before we get into the Oscars here, the nature of fame and everything like that, I want to go to when I was channel surfing the other day, caught your little blurb there with Robert Pattinson about the new movie here. And I like the way that the feature was kind of oriented there, that you know, you get these guys that they just, once they've had this big breakthrough, you know, and then they go on to do these other roles in these other movies. I mean, it just gets to be crazy. I just got that vibe as I was watching your piece there with them, that, so, man, what's it like for this guy now? And it's an amazing story.
It's really incredible. I've had the privilege of covering some of the biggest stars in the world, but I've never seen the type of reception that Rob gets when he's out either in the streets of Comic-Con in San Diego or in New York City the other night for the Remember Me premiere. There were 3,000 people outside the Plaza Hotel. It's just crazy, and he handles it very, very well, or as well as someone can. He's not the clean, polished, self-deprecating, charming George Clooney. He's not the polished and slick and everyman that Matt Damon is. He's a young kid who's figuring it out, but he seems to be accepting of it. And this is a film, Remember Me, that he's an executive producer on. It's a love story. It's not a teen heartthrob kind of. It's not a teen romance kind of movie in the negative connotations of the genre. It's a very well done adult modern love story, and he gives a great performance. He's surrounding himself with Chris Cooper and Pierce Brosnan and some established talents, and he does a really good job in this movie. I hope people give it a chance and don't look at it as just, oh, the kid from Twilight is in another heartthrob movie. No, he definitely, on this film, he proved to me that there's something more to him than simply Edward Cullen.
Well, you know what? I mean, that's a really interesting point, Ben, the way that you compared and contrasted him to some of these other guys, because I can't help listening to that answer and think that, you know, maybe, you know, as real as the kid is, maybe he's got a really good grasp on the zeitgeist right now. You know, it's a gritty time in this country. I think people are looking for something real. This is not an era where anybody, you know, seeming to be overly polished is going to get themselves over, I wouldn't think, to a great degree. Does he really have that handle on the zeitgeist in America in 2010?
Honestly, I don't think he's looking at it like that. I think he's looking at it like, oh, I've got an interview with Ben. I'm going to show up with my cigarettes and hungover and my T-shirt, and I'll try and work it out. But, you know, Shia LaBeouf is someone who's a similar age and has been in films on the size of Twilight in terms of how many people go out and see him. And Shia is funny. He's smooth. He's comfortable being a movie star. Rob is a kid who would rather be at the local pub with his band playing guitar and the piano than doing a press junket in a hotel. But he's professional. He's on time. He gives you what you need. It's amazing to watch his growth, because I interviewed him, I think, 3 years ago, maybe, at Comic-Con and on the set of the Harry Potter films, and his life has obviously changed dramatically, and there's no way to handle it. There's no right way to handle it. When, I mean, thousands and police officers are taking pictures, and the credentialed photographers on the press line are chanting his name. It's unlike any other star's reception. It's become part of his persona, and he's going to have to deal with it, but he wants to focus on the work, and he wants to focus on acting as much as he can, and he's done a good job of picking projects outside of the Twilight genre that have challenged him and tried to get him to grow as an actor, and Remember Me is a nice first step in that evolution.
Well, you know, and that just makes me appreciate what he's doing even more with your answer there, you know, that being real is not just, you know, an image or a pose for the moment here, but who the guy really is. We applaud people who are who they really are on this show, so hey, you know, all the power in the world to him. He's riding a hell of a wave, and yeah, it appears to have no signs of abating anytime soon. As it goes for the Oscars going into this weekend, the major storyline, at least in the moment here, is this whole, you know, hubbub around the Hurt Locker, you know, the email campaign that went out. It's considered to be unseemly in Hollywood circles to do this kind of overt campaigning, you know, much less, you know, this almost seems reminiscent of, you know, Inside the Beltway here with kind of the shots at Avatar and, you know, kind of taking it to a new level there. What's your sense of this? Again, most of the ballots, as I understand it, were already in by the time the first started to fly here. But, you know, how do you think it affects the mood going into the weekend?
Well, it's unfortunate because the Hurt Locker is a film that has gotten to this moment the Academy Awards, nominated 9 times, one of the favorites in the Best Picture category, off positive word of mouth and people telling friends, see this movie, seek out this movie, drive to go 50 miles if it's not playing near you, go and see the film. I remember I saw the movie in 2008 at the Toronto International Film Festival. It premiered all the way back then. So it's been on the scene for a while and has gotten to this point because of word of mouth. And it's unfortunate that, you know, there's a difference between a producer of a film campaigning for his film, saying, hey, vote for my movie, vote for my movie. That's what everybody does. But I think he crossed the line when he says, vote for my movie and vote for our competitive movie, vote for that last. I think that's when it's gone a little too far. Now, the Academy is saying that this guy is no longer being welcomed to the ceremony. I think that's a little drastic. It's unfortunate. This is a highlight of his career and of his life, and he's not going to be able to be inside that Kodak Theater. I was inside the theater today seeing where people were sitting and hanging out with the producers of the Oscars, Adam Shankman and Bill Mechanic, and it's a special place. It's a really magical place, and it's unfortunate that this guy's email chain is going to ban him from doing that. You know, producers campaign for their movies. That's what they do. That's what a producer does. Look at Harvey Weinstein, who is the best at getting people excited about his films come award show season, whether it's a Shakespeare in Love or a film like The Inglourious Basterds this year. But there's a way in which you do it, and there's a way where you keep it about your movie, and it's sort of the unwritten rule in Hollywood, and he broke that rule.
You know what's interesting, too? I mean, I'm always kind of amused whenever I look at an edict that goes down. It's got such an obvious backfire coming its way that it's amazing that nobody else, you know, in power seemingly can see this happening. It seems so obvious. What do you think happens if they win Sunday night? I mean, everybody is going to be like, oh, we want to thank our comrade who couldn't be here tonight. They're just setting themselves up.
You know what? If he wins, I don't think he'll care. I think he'll go straight to the after party and he'll have the night of his life. I think it'll be quickly forgotten that he wasn't able to attend the actual show. If you're a producer for a Best Picture winner, you just got your next project greenlit.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it's, you know, in the parlance of what we just saw, you know, he's got his gold medal. I get that. But I'm saying the Academy is going to have a lot of egg on their face. Are they not? Because, you know, they're going to get tweaked on stage live in front of the world if this guy, you know, isn't there for the moment and everybody else lets them on stage, lets them hear about it.
Well, look, the Academy is an organization that is very strong, is very, you know, lives in its convictions and is very strong, has a strong opinion about how things are done. And when they announced that there would be 10 films for the Best Picture category for the first time since 1943, a lot of people said it was a bad idea, but they wrote it out. And I don't want to call them a stubborn bunch, but they have their opinion on how things should be done, and they stick by it, so that's commendable to some extent. But what would the Academy Awards be without a little bit of drama and a little bit of controversy? And for us at the E Network, you know, we're going live all day on Sunday. It's just another of the many stories we get to cover.
Well, you know what? And again, I guess if I'm going to be consistent after what I said about Pattinson, I mean, then they're just being who they are, and I guess I have to respect them for that. I will be a little amused if they get the black eye from that, just because it seems so predictable. But yeah, I guess you have to respect their convictions. As far as handicapping this mofo, the world seemingly has been of the conviction that the Hurt Locker would be, shall we say, a moderate favorite going into this thing here. And again, the controversy probably will not affect it because it looks like the preponderance of ballots, if not all of them, would have been in by that point in time. Just in terms of the mood, as I'm able to track it on the internet, maybe a little less so a day. In terms of maybe the public perception that the Hurt Locker was going to win, that seems to have peaked. Now it's kind of coming back the other way a little bit to we don't know. What's your sense of it?
Well, with having 10 films in the Best Picture category, you need a lesser percentage, obviously, of votes to win. And it's come down to a great David and Goliath story of this small film that bounced around festivals and has inched its way towards only, what, $12 or $13 million at the box office, going up against the biggest movie of all time. It's a great story to have Avatar versus The Hurt Locker as the two films that are really seeming to be the favorites for the front runners. There's also talks out here in Hollywood right now that Harvey is doing his thing and getting a, an Inglorious Bastards campaign going that might surprise some people and come out of left field. So the fact that last year it was pretty much locked and loaded. Everybody knew it was going to be Slumdog Millionaire, deservingly so. And now this year there's some uneasiness, there's some uncertainty, and I think that makes it exciting on Sunday.
Yeah, it definitely seems like there's a little bit of drama going there, back and forth. Let me ask you, as somebody who's in the industry, who's immersed on this on a day-to-day basis, and who, as such, was tracking Avatar long before it was even remotely on the radar for the rest of us. Just to somebody like me, who tends to see some of the stuff more so on the surface, for a mega blockbuster like this to have gotten this nomination, and as you said, there's 10 nominees now, so it's a little easier to get nominated, but to be regarded as a serious contender, I mean, I wouldn't have necessarily believed that to be the case, at least when the thing was in production or whatever. It had to have really wowed Hollywood, because isn't the deck kind of stacked against you if you've got a budget of that sort and technology of that sort? Because isn't there the perception that, it's supposed to be a great movie, and these other ones here had to overcome something to get to that point?
Well, I mean, I've been doing Avatar interviews now, I feel like, for 2 or 3 years. Zoe Saldana, who plays Neytiri, is a friend of mine. She's been telling me about the film for a long time. I remember I interviewed Sam Worthington back at Comic-Con in 2008, I want to say, maybe even 2007, when he was announced to take on the role. It was this kind of secret project you couldn't really talk about. Everyone knew it was coming eventually. But then you're right, as it played well in London, I was there at the premiere in London, the world premiere, and the response to it was simply sensational. Everyone realized then that we are witnessing something very special. And say what you want about the story, say what you want about James Cameron, you got to be crazy, you got to be an idiot not to respect that movie and understand what it's done for the future of filmmaking in a tough economy, to put up the numbers it has, to create an experience that the world can enjoy. That's a tremendous achievement. And people, James Cameron only makes movies every so often, and when he does, they're usually pretty good. And so I don't think anybody in Hollywood was truly surprised it was in consideration for the best picture. And you're talking about effects and budgets and, movies making a lot of money. A lot of best picture winners over the years have done well at the box office. You think of the Lord of the Rings films, you think of Titanic, you think recently to The Departed. These films have found their audience, and that's a reason why they're honored in the way that they are, in addition to, of course, being really good movies. And I mean, that film Avatar is such a game changer and such a groundbreaking experience that it's going to influence filmmakers for a long time.
I'm glad you mentioned also overcoming the economy, because I've heard the opposite argument made about that. It's one that I really find kind of specious whenever anybody makes it, in terms of, you can't compared to what other movies were charging over time. And it's true. It's a little bit of apples and oranges, and we've all got grandparents or aunts or uncles or whatever that can tell us, back when, it cost a nickel to go see a Humphrey Bogart movie. But having said that...
However, that said, when it cost a nickel to go see a Humphrey Bogart movie, you didn't have the option of staying at home and watching your satellite TV and going on the internet and downloading whatever Steve Jobs is selling you this week. There's so much more entertainment to consume nowadays. So while price points for tickets, yes, are at an all-time high, you're also competing with higher gas prices. People have to drive to the theater, and that is an expensive endeavor. You're dealing with take a family of four to the theater, get everybody tickets, get everybody popcorn and soda. That's a much more financially a difficult thing for some families to commit to. So you're also competing. Like, I'm watching the Knick game on my satellite TV in Los Angeles, and that didn't exist, of course, back when Gone with the Wind and all these great films were coming out that would have put up the kind of numbers that Avatar had. So there's a lot more entertainment. There was no E channel. There was no, there's no satellite radio. There's so much more entertainment nowadays that audiences have so many more choices to make in how they entertain themselves and how they spend their money. That's the counterpoint or the counter argument to the idea of, it cost a nickel back then and it's $15 now, so of course it's going to be the highest grossing.
Well, all very good points, But out of those ones, I think the strongest point you mentioned is merely that people are spending money. Again, in this god-awful economy, things have been bad for a while. Things, by all accounts, are going to be bad going, you know, for a while into the future here. So it's not even like people can figure things are necessarily going to be better next month. People are going out and spending these prices because they think it's worth it. That speaks volumes.
There's nothing that beats the experience of going to see a movie, especially one like Avatar, in the theater. And then when the lights get low and the music comes up and you're in a room full of strangers, there's a certain energy there that will never be able to be duplicated in the home theater experience. People say all the time, "Oh, do you take a date? Do you go to the movies with dates? Do you ever take a girl to the movies?" And there's something that will always be romantic about going on a movie date with a girl. I think it'd be a little uncomfortable if the first time you go on a date with somebody, you say, "Hey, why don't you come on my house and sit on the couch?" That's maybe like a third or fourth date is you whip out the Samsung DVD or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So there's something about going to the movies that will always be an incredible experience, and especially when you have these types of films in 3D on the IMAX, huge special effects. That's just the ultimate movie-going experience, so that can never be taken away, no matter how much they cost.
Exactly, and when a movie like this is judged by such a majority of the public to sort of exemplify everything that's great about the movie experience, that's going to lead to the tidal wave that it basically has created here. I'd like to run this by you. This is a compilation that I'm seeing here. This is courtesy of awardsdaily.com. A general consensus as far as what they seem to be tracking on the internet. I'd like to get your thoughts on some of these categories. Tell me if there's any of these ones here that you would disagree with in terms of them being judged to be fairly decent favorites at the moment, to whatever degree. Best Picture, The Hurt Locker. Best Director, Catherine Bigelow. Best Actor, Jeff Bridges. Best Actress, Sandra Bullock. Supporting Actor, Christoph Waltz. Supporting Actress, Monique. Let's leave it at that list for right now. Any of those ones strike you as not being necessarily solid favorites in your mind?
No, absolutely not. It's pretty par for the course. I think the two categories where there's the biggest showdown, if you will, or the tightest race, are in Best Picture and Best Director categories for Avatar and for The Hurt Locker and for Bigelow and Cameron. But other than that, you know, it seems to be it's one of those years where the performances are rather locked in. I'm going to drop a name for a second, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I had the chance to interview Matt Damon the other day, who's nominated in the Best Supporting category. And he said, "Look, I'm happy to go show up on Sunday, but I know I'm not going to go home with an Oscar. It's going to Christoph Waltz." When other people in your category are publicly saying, "No, you will win," I think you have a pretty good chance of winning.
Yeah.
So those odds seem pretty accurate over on awardsdaily.com.
Yeah, that's the sense that there seems to be. I'm not surprised that you were told that by Damon, because it seems to be a pretty strong consensus out there. This whole Best Director thing here, you know, I'm always a fan of, you know, comparisons, you know, in a historical sense here. I'm struggling to come up with anything here. The personal nature, if you will, of the competition, and they've both been pros about it, Bigelow and Cameron. But, I mean, I'm struggling to draw any comparisons to any times in the past. Can you think of anything comparable to that, you know, you being more of a film historian, where you've had such a showdown?
I mean, it's really unique, and the fact that they were husband and wife, and now they're divorced and the two favorites in the same category. In any other year, if one of them weren't in the category, I'd say, "Oh, they're a lock to win." But it's really unique, and it's definitely unprecedented, and you know, you're right. They have handled it very well throughout the whole season. Somebody was joking with me today saying that James, you're a sports guy. You'll appreciate this. James Cameron looked like he could be cast as Larry Bird's father in a movie, don't you think? I like that. But, yeah, they both have, have handled it so well, and it adds to the drama on Sunday, which we love over at E!
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, and you guys are going to have the coverage going there, and You know, why don't you talk about that for a moment? Because, again, you know, there's any number of ways where people can partake of this, where people can take this in. Because you've got, you know, on a daily basis here, you know, at any point in time on the clock, it could be found at I Am Ben Lyons, the handle on Twitter. So you got that. You've got the place where people can track you at eonline.com as far as your reviews. You guys have got the all-day coverage on Sunday. Talk about a lot of the different ways that you're going to be immersed in all of this over the course of the next couple of days and beyond.
Well, it's amazing. Nobody covers the Academy Awards like the E! Network. We have all of our correspondents on the carpet. We've got Seacrest interviewing the stars as they arrive. We're going live for 4 hours before the stars arrive, and then 2 hours while they're there, and then two more afterwards. So we'll be covering that thing for 8 or 9 hours. We're having a huge party at the W Hotel in Hollywood, a viewing party and an after party. I will be inside the theater at the Academy Awards tweeting, like you said, at I Am Ben Lyons. So when the show's going on, I'll be there tweeting. And it's just, it's just an awesome team they put together at E! You know, you see me and you see Juliana and Sal and the gang, but there's just this staff of hundreds of people and trucks and lighting and camera guys, and just the whole team comes out. It's our Super Bowl, and we do it bigger and bigger and bigger and better every year. So I'm very lucky that I get to call E! My home, because we own the Academy Awards. We're live the whole day. It's a really special time for our network.
Yeah, you guys are on it like nobody else is.
It's crazy. They have cameras on rooftops and sky bridges. And I mean, we're on in 125 countries. I've been doing interviews in Malaysia and Singapore and Israel. And it's just been it's just really amazing. And I'm so fortunate and lucky to call E! My family. It's been great.
Yeah, it's a great place for you. You know, it's a tremendous platform, you know, because you guys are just so immersed in this like nobody else is. I don't think anybody can deny that. We talked about a second ago about, you know, you being a, you know, historian of this kind of stuff here, too. As I understand it, you're around for our next segment as well, correct? The discussion of sports movies?
A little bit, yeah. I'm kind of on the run, to be honest. I'm taking a red eye to New York. I'm hosting a Samsung event at the Time Warner Center tomorrow. They got a new Blu-ray player that's just amazing. And I said, listen, I got to get the word out about this thing. So
sure.
I don't know if I can hang out too much tonight, but it's Oscar week, so I'm just being pulled in a million different directions. But quickly talking about sports movies, since I'm not going to be able to stay on for the next segment, The Blind Side is the highest grossing sports film of all time. You know, it's a film that is a true story, and it's Michael Orr, who is still in the NFL, has been able to enjoy this experience, and it's a testament to a great sports story that people are going out and seeing the film. You know, some of my favorites, of course, on the more guilty pleasure side of things, are the Major League series, not the one with Scott Bakula in the minor leagues, but Major Leagues 1 and 2 were some of my favorites as a kid growing up, and White Men Can't Jump, and Love and Basketball is a great movie. I used to date a girl in high school who was a basketball player. We watched that movie and, like, ice our ankles after practice. That movie was the best. But then, of course, you got to go with the heavyweights like Rocky and Rudy and He Got Game. He Got Game is a fun one for me just as a basketball fan in New York. But The Hurricane, I was thinking of, from Denzel Washington, a great boxing film. And there's certain standards when it comes to sports films. Caddyshack, of course. And then they're the ones that kind of dive into the guilty pleasure category, which I always enjoy. It's a fun boxing movie that Adam Carolla did called The Hammer, which came out a couple years ago. I think me and Carolla might have been the only people who saw it. And, you know, the last 2 years, I think two of the greatest sports movies ever made were released. The Wrestler, which we don't really look at as a sports movie, but it is.
Yep.
And Sugar, which is from the directors of Half Nelson. It's a wonderful story of a Dominican baseball player who is sent to Iowa in the minor leagues and the challenges he faces in acclimating himself to the major league lifestyle. And it's a great sports movie that came out. So and I think with the success of The Blind Side, we're going to see more sports movies, which is only a good thing.
It was a true pleasure to get to you in terms of The Wrestler, to get to do something I know you got to do with that, talk to Robert Siegel. That was a great interview that we got to have with him. It was a great, great movie. You mentioned some of the you really helped set the table for us here for the next segment here. We're talking about some of these movies and glad to get your thoughts on them. And, you know, my personal favorite is listed in their top 20, Miracle, at number 16. That was That was my favorite for something I watched. You mentioned Major League as well. I'll just close by saying this. A movie that gave me, as a young tyke growing up in Seatown, a little bit of hope back in the day, Ben.
You know, I wish it was not a case of art imitating life and that you guys would get your long overdue World Series. But those movies meant so much to me as a kid. They were a little risque. I was younger. The first time I got to see someone like an R-rated movie like that or a riskier movie like that. And, I mean, look at Dennis Haysbert now selling the insurance. I'll always look at him as Pedro Serrano and ask him where Joe Boo is. And, you know, even the sequel, even when Omar Epps took over for Wesley Snipes, Willie Mays Hayes, and battling against Jack Parkman on the White Sox. I loved those movies as a kid.
I would rant about how the Dolans are the devil incarnate, but you knowing the Knicks as you do, I that would be preaching to the choir. So, you know,
they're up 13 points against Detroit in the first half here. So, you know, look, I like the moves they made at the trade deadline. And McGrady's not the player that he once was, but at least it gives us a guy who down the stretch we know he's going to be taking the shot, win or lose. And, look, I don't think they gave up anything. He gave up Jared Jeffries, Larry Hughes. I call him Cirque du Soleil, Cirque du Soleil. He's like a Cirque du Soleil clown, Nate Robinson. Get him out of here. I think he's a distraction and he's fun for the fans, but not a winner in my book. So I'm happy with the moves they made. And look, I know we're not the favorites to get LeBron, and the stinky showing we put on the other night in Cleveland doesn't make things easier for us, but at least they're putting themselves in a position where they're in the conversation as a fan. That's all you can really ask for from an organization.
That's all you can ask for. And again, as I say, great to have you on here tonight with us, Ben. Real pleasure. I know people will be checking you out on E the next couple of days. You know, we've got links up on our rundown here tonight for your Twitter page, your column with the your column page at E Online, etc. So, you know, best of luck the next couple of days. I know you guys are going to kill it with the coverage. We look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
I appreciate it so much. I can't wait to get on the golf course Monday, March 8th. I'm so exhausted already, but we're having a lot of fun, of course. So thank you for having me on the show.
Hey, anytime, Ben. We love it. It's always great conversation. Talk to you soon, I hope.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. The great Ben Lyons.